Welcome to the Deep Dives. We take dense research, pull it apart, and give you the key takeaways.
And today we're diving into something pretty fascinating, the link between what you might call energy and the total amount of stuff in systems governed by, well, stochastic heat equations.
Yeah, stochastic heat equations. Sounds a bit heavy, I know.
It does, but really it's about understanding how randomness impacts systems that naturally spread out, kind of like heat. Our goal here is to unpack this research paper and see how the energy in these systems affects their overall size and, importantly, whether they act independently over time.
Exactly. We've got this mathematical paper, lots of symbols, but don't worry, we'll translate. We're aiming for the interesting nuggets here, the core ideas, without getting bogged down in, you know, all the super technical details.
Okay, so where do we start? I think the main thing is the equation itself, equation 1.1 in the paper.
Right. To keep in Yoruba, to UTX plus EOTX, UTX, PTX plus UTX. Looks like a mouthful.
It does, but let's break it down piece by piece.
Okay, first bit, UTX. This is our random function. It's telling us the state of the system at a specific time T and a specific place X.
Yeah, and it's crucial, like you said, it's the state, not how fast it's changing. The euro on the left, that's the rate of change.
Got it. Then there's XDX. This is the space-time white noise.
Right. Think of it as random little kicks happening everywhere all the time, tiny unpredictable bursts influencing the system. Equation 1.2 defines how random it is, its covariance.
Okay, random kicks, then phi.
That's the diffusion coefficient, basically how quickly things spread out, like how fast heat would dissipate in the system. Higher theta, faster spread.
Makes sense. And we need a starting point, right? It's U0.
Exactly. The initial state, the paper says it's non-random and essentially bounded L infinity. Basically, it doesn't start at infinity anywhere. It's, you know, well-behaved at the start.
And the last piece is the non-linearity.
Yeah.
Also non-random. Two main things about sigma. It's smooth globally. Lipschitz continuous is the term, meaning no crazy jumps. Sure. And importantly, it's always zero or positive. And it's only zero if the input is zero. This sort of guides the randomness, stops it from doing anything.
Right. Keeps it somewhat contained. And all these conditions together lead to something quite neat mentioned in equation 1.4.
Mm-hmm. If you start with a non-negative U0, so like a positive amount of stuff,
then the solution UJX always stays non-negative too. It can't suddenly become negative.
Exactly. And that's super useful because it means we can think of UJX as a density, like the density of some continuous cloud of particles spreading out.
Oh, okay. So if it's a density, we can talk about the total amount.
Precisely. We can define the total mass, just integrate UJX over all space. Mathematically, that's the L1 norm, equation 1.5.
Right.
Think of it as just adding up all the stuff or counting all the particles at time t.
So we have this random spreading system, and we can measure its total size, its total mass. The paper then asks a really basic question. Yeah, can this total mass stay finite? Or does it inevitably blow up and become infinite? And is there maybe some weird state in between?
And the first big answer they give is corollary 1.1.
Yeah.
It's actually quite elegant.
It really is. It says, for these kinds of equations, the system is finite, meaning the total mass stays finite over time if and only if you started with a finite total mass. So if U0 is in L1R.
So it's straightforward then. Finite start, finite system. Infinite start.
Infinite system. It becomes infinite eventually. There's no sort of middle ground where it hovers indefinitely. The initial condition dictates the long-term scale.
Okay, that sets the stage. But then the paper gets into this idea of energy and how it connects things.
Right. The core theme shifts to how the mutual energy between two different systems like this affects whether their total masses act independently over time. You know, whether they become decorrelated.
Mutual energy sounds a bit abstract again. How does corollary 1.2 make that more concrete?
Okay, imagine you have two of these systems running independently, maybe with different nonlinearities, one and two, different starting functions, U and V0.
Two separate random clouds spreading out.
Exactly. Now, if the initial clouds, U and V0, are located really far apart in space, the paper uses Hausdorff distance between their supports.
Support just means where they are non-zero, right? Where the initial stuff actually is.
Yep. So if one blob starts way over here and the other way over there,
right,
then corollary 1.2 says that their total masses, measured later at time t, will be almost uncorrelated. They won't really influence each other's total size, at least for a while.
That makes intuitive sense. Things far apart shouldn't affect each other immediately.
Right. And they even quantify how long a while is. The decorrelation holds up to a time that's proportional to how far apart they started. There are these factors, E and D, that depend on the specifics, the nonlinearities, and the diffusion rate.
So the math captures this idea that influence takes time to travel across distance, even in these random settings.
Yeah, but then they take it a step further, which I find really cool. Corollary 1.3 connects this whole thing to the Fourier transform, and even sort of the spirit of Heisenberg's uncertainty principle.
Okay, Fourier transform, that's about breaking down a function into its frequencies, right? Like the notes in a chord.
Exactly. And the uncertainty principle idea, loosely speaking, is that you can't have a function and its Fourier transform both squeezed into tiny regions. If it's narrow in space, it's wide in frequency, and vice versa.
So how does that relate to our two random clouds?
Well, the paper argues, if the frequency content of the initial states U and VA has very little overlap, meaning the supports of their Fourier transforms barely intersect.
So even if they're physically close, if they're made up of very different frequencies.
Precisely. Then their total masses will also be nearly uncorrelated for a good amount of time. It's as if they're vibrating on different wavelengths and just don't interact much initially.
Wow. Okay, that's less intuitive than the spatial separation.
It is a bit mind-bending. Again, they quantify it. The decorrelation time is proportional to the logarithm of 1 over the size of that frequency overlap.
So tiny overlap in frequency means potentially long independence in total mass.
Yeah. And it leads to this almost paradoxical thought they mention. What if the frequency supports were completely disjoint? No overlap at all. Would the masses be uncorrelated forever?
Seems like it might imply that.
But then they pull back a bit. They say, well, for most nice functions we deal with things in the Wiener algebra R, their Fourier transforms can't have completely disjoint support unless the function is just zero everywhere. It's a property of how Fourier transforms work for non-zero functions. They always spread out a bit in the frequency domain.
Ah, okay. So perfect frequency separation is usually impossible for anything interesting.
Pretty much. So you get near decorrelation for a long time if the frequency overlap is small, but maybe not forever in most practical cases.
Got it. And they quickly mention one more thing, right? Extending this beyond smooth starting functions.
Yeah, corollary 3.1. It basically says these ideas also work if you start not with a nice smooth function, U0, but with an initial measure. Think of it like starting with point sources or delta functions, maybe.
More general starting conditions.
Exactly. There's a technical condition on the measure, equation 3.10, but the main point holds. The system stays finite if and only if the total initial measure is finite. That core link is robust.
Okay, let's try and wrap this up. We looked at these stochastic heat equations.
Randomness plus spreading.
And found, first, a pretty clear rule. Finite start means finite system. Infinite start means infinite system. The initial amount sets the scale.
Yep, no surprises there in a way, but good to have it confirmed.
And second, this more subtle idea about independence or decorrelation between two such systems.
Right, their total masses tend to act independently for longer if the initial states are far apart, either far apart in actual physical space.
Or far apart in terms of their frequency content, their underlying vibrations.
Exactly. Separation in either domain buys you time before they significantly influence each other's total size.
It really is fascinating how the math connects to these intuitive, but also sometimes surprising, ideas about influence and separation.
Definitely. And for you listening, it makes you wonder, right? Do similar principles hold in other complex systems? Think about, I don't know, information spreading or maybe economic interactions. Does initial separation, spatial or otherwise, guarantee some period of independence?
And what about that frequency separation idea? Are there analogies in other fields where things seem independent because their fundamental characteristics don't overlap much, even if they're physically close? Lots to think about.
For sure. And if you're really keen, stochastic partial differential equations, SPDEs, that's the field to look into.
So maybe a final thought to leave you with. The paper uses this term mutual energy related to decorrelation.
Mm-hmm.
Can we frame that differently? Maybe think about it like initial mutual information. If two systems start with very little shared information, maybe encoded in this energy or separation, does that inherently limit how strongly they can become dependent later on?
Ooh, that's an interesting angle. How does limiting that initial connection, whether spatial or frequency-based, constrain the future entanglement of the systems?
Food for thought. It's definitely been a deep dive. We hope this gives you a clearer picture of these fascinating systems. Thanks for joining us.